Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And you know, we all have a lot of ideas about what shame is. Certain images come to mind from our own life, from the world of fiction. But we're here to tell you that shame is Spider-Man.
Shame is Spider-Man. And let's explain that. Let's unpack that. Because there was an experiment.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, indeed. A 2013 study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences that took more than 700 participants from Finland, Sweden, and Taiwan, and they had them view emotion-laden words, videos, facial expressions, and stories, and then the participants self-reported areas of their bodies that felt different following the exposure. So then they took this information and they used it to create computer-generated silhouettes with the areas colored to note areas of increased bodily sensation, like reds, yellows, and oranges, and decreased cold blues. Okay? So the aim here was to map bodily sensations in connection with specific emotions.
And it ends up looking like an infrared image, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, it does. It looks like straight-up infrared predator imagery of a human body. But it's not created that. It's created through self-reporting. And really, they're quite interesting looking. Do check it out. I'll include a link to the study on the landing page for this episode.
Yeah, you should check it out because all of those emotions are represented on the body. And the only emotion that is a full-bodied emotion mm-hmm. that's self-reported is happiness, which I think is not too surprising, right? But the one that we are focusing on today, shame, well, it's represented in a way that the person, the silhouette, kind of looks like Spider-Man.
Indeed, yeah. Whereas happiness is like bright yellow face, yellow chest, and then red over the rest of the body. Shame is mostly dark body, but also some red on the chest, red face, and then these big sort of almond-shaped yellow blotches right where our cheeks would be, but they really do look like the large, low, almond-shaped eyes of everyone's favorite comic book web-slinger.
Now, this was observed by a commenter on the actual article, which we thought was pretty clever. So he thought, yeah, shame does look like Spider-Man in the body when it's expressed. And anxiety, by the way, to me, looks like Darth Maul.
Let's see which one's anxiety. Let me look. Yeah, I'm getting a definite Dark Maul kind of quality off of that.
Yeah, kind of like streaks on the cheeks there.
Yeah. Sadness looks a little bit like that painting, the Scream, you know?
Mm-hmm. I thought that too. So, and I thought, yeah, that is sadness. Although the Scream, I think, is supposed to be some sort of existential terror.
Yeah.
That's also sad too, right?
Sadness also kind of looks, you know, unsurprisingly like the ghost character on Yo Gabba Gabba. Goomba or something like that. I can't
Google?
Remember. Google. Yeah, it looks kind of like Google.
Can't believe we know that. All right. So obviously we're talking about shame today. You know, that particular feeling that is evoked when, say, your grandmother says something like, shame on you, Julie Douglas, shame on you. Right? There's a whole boatload of stuff associated with shame. But first, we should probably define it.
Yeah, and in this, we get into the basic meat of shame and guilt. They're often thought of sort of as the same thing, but they're different. They're quite different.
And this is really important. Like, a lot hinges on this.
Yes. So what's guilt, right? When do you feel guilt? You feel guilt when you have remorse for something you did, a specific crime, a specific action. There's this thing that you did, and you're like, oh, I did that. That sucks. I'm sorry that I did it. But then you have shame. And shame is a little different. Shame is, if it's attached to an action, then it's more like, I can't believe I'm the type of person who would do that. It's the painful feeling that arises from the consciousness of something dishonorable, improper. It's almost more tied to, there's something wrong with me. There's a fault in me, not a fault in merely in my actions.
Yeah, sociologist Brené Brown says, in the simplest terms, shame is about who we are, not what we've done. Mm. It's often lasting, devastating, and makes us feel abnormal and alone. And she gives some examples of her own research into this when she's looking at the difference between guilt and shame. She says, guilt is, I did something bad. Shame is, I am bad. Or, I made a flawed decision, or I am flawed.
Mm-hmm.
So you see the pattern there.
Yeah, there are fundamental differences here that we'll definitely pull apart in this episode.
Right, and we're going to talk about how powerful this emotion is, shame. I mean, how it can actually dictate the path of your life and how you operate out in the world. But first, we have to look at one of shame's calling cards, also guilt and embarrassment's calling cards.
Mm-hmm.
Blushing.
Indeed.
And we'll look at Papa Darwin here, who in The Expression of Emotions in Man and Animals, which he wrote in 1872, looked at the movements of expression in the face and the body and was particularly interested in blushing. He said it is the most peculiar and the most human of all expressions. Now, Darwin suspected that blushing had to do with how we appear to others. He wrote, mental states which induce blushing consist of shyness, shame, and modesty, the essential element in all being self-attention. It is not the simple act of reflecting on our own appearance, but the thinking of what others think of us which excites a blush. And he was on to something there. He also felt like the blushing was directly related to the part of the body that the person was thinking of or thought was being observed. In part, he thought this because he was looking at a physician's account of a woman who, when she disrobed in her chest area, began to blush in her chest area. Now, he was taking his cues mostly from physicians' accounts because he wasn't going around making people blush and then gathering a bunch of data. So that's where he was collecting some of his thoughts from. And he also thought that blushing could have been genetic, like this idea that the more your ancestors blush, the more robust it would show up or be selected for in yourself. Now, is this the full picture? No. And in fact, Darwin didn't distinguish between embarrassment and guilt and shame to try to get to the reasons for blushing. He just kind of lumped them all in one big pool. In 1871, he wrote to his friend H. Wedgwood. He said, I wish I had said more about shame, an awfully complex subject. where no two persons would ever quite agree, and I hardly expect anyone will agree with me. But as yet, I nail my colors to the mast. In other words, here's what I've figured out so far about shame and blushing, and I don't think it's the full picture.
You know, and indeed, the full picture is still kind of lacking today, even though there's been a lot more study since that time. You know, with blushing, we're talking about the involuntary reddening of a person's face due to emotional stress. That might be anxiety, it could be romance, anger, embarrassment, and of course, shame. Now, the questions arise, though, of course. Exactly, you know, how is it coming about physiologically? What are there different types of blushes? You know, we observe things like the mere awareness of a blush can cause it to increase. Being told that you're blushing when you're not can cause the blush to manifest. And certainly mileage varies from person to person. We can all think of people who blush more easily than others. But scientists have asked, is a blush a single phenomenon, or are there different kinds of blushing? Like, how do you make sense of the fact that you have, like, that sudden blush, like, oops, did something embarrassing, oops, I'm really ashamed, just total red face, versus the creeping blush that might manifest, you know, slowly during the course of a presentation or a speech or an increasingly intense conversation? As psychologist Ray Kreuzer points out, it's an understudied area of human expression. And part of this is because the blush is difficult to measure, even with our modern tools, even with, you know, thermal sensors and cameras. The fleeting blush, especially, like the micro expression of blushes, is very difficult to study. And the physiology of the blush itself is really a complex tapestry that involves the sympathetic nervous system and its regulation. It involves bradykinin, a compound released in the blood in some circumstances that causes contraction of smooth muscles and the dilation of blood vessels, histamine, nitric oxide, and a number of other combined factors. And you can also throw into the mix that there are plenty of other things that can make your face flush, not only emotions, but, you know, hot flashes, exercises, sexual arousal, you name it.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month. Taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics, in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and Vlastar on the business. I understand now. It is a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Gene. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, there's also the kind of blush that can arise when you do have attention directed toward you, but it's pleasurable, right? Like maybe it's some sort of positive experience and you're blushing, but it then can become negative because you're called out for it.
Right.
So there's a changeability to blushing. And there are a ton of different kinds, as you say, that we haven't really gotten to the bottom of, and a bunch of different sources for blushing. But I think most people can relate to a blushing related to unwanted attention at one time or another in your life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in order to get to the depths of the self-conscious blush, there was a study conducted by Peter D. Drummond and Nadia Mirko. This was published in the March 2004 edition of Psychotherapy, with the paper titled, Staring at One Side of the Face Increases Blood Flow on That Side of the Face. Okay? So let's figure out what they did here, because I think that gives you a clue to at least one of their methods. The setup is this. They had 28 participants who were asked to either sing out loud or read out loud. Robert, what would your preference be?
You know, it comes down to who's watching. You know, I'm going to be more comfortable reading, but singing is a different situation entirely. It's a different experience, a different communication, a different expression of yourself.
Uh-huh. Right. Reading is more, it's a normative thing, right? Like you're talking right now, you can read at the same pace. There's not a lot of difference there. But singing out of context, like when you're not on a stage, you really kind of, draws a lot of attention, right? It says, hey, look at me. I'm doing something totally weird out of context. So that's why they chose this. And this is what they found. Increases in cheek temperature were greater on the observed than the unobserved side during both tasks. Okay. Changes in cheek temperature were symmetrical when the experimenter sat next to another 23 participants and looked straight ahead, as well when the experimenter stared at one side of the participant's face through a glass window while the participants would sing. However, increases in cutaneous blood flow were greater on the observed and the unobserved side of the forehead during singing. Okay, there's more blushing going on one side of the face. So I think that gives you a bit of a clue as to that unwanted attention and how it would act on the body.
Okay. And, of course, as we were discussing before we came in to record, I imagine this may differ depending on how musical one's family upbringing is, or how prone one is to break into song in their daily life.
Right. If you were really off key, perhaps you would have a scarlet blush, which might even be sort of saying, I apologize.
And indeed, that's a whole other argument, that that blushing is a signal to your fellow primates to communicate something. Now, when it comes to primates, it's worth noting, and I think I've mentioned this in the past, when you look at social and non-social primates, the non-social ones, the loners, that's where you tend to find the really crazy-looking primate faces. That's where you see, a whole lot of colors and just crazy stuff going on, you know? Like, really the eye-catching primates. But the social primates, those are the ones that are going to have the plainer faces, the faces that there's less remarkable coloration going on. And that's because the face, as with humans, is essentially a communications array. You know, it's for the use of expressions and micro expressions to communicate what you're feeling and what you're about to do to those around you. And so the argument here is that the blush is pretty much the same. Now, if it is, then what is a blush saying? Well, according to clinical psychologist and author Robert J. Edelman, who's done a lot of work with blushing and shame, he says that you're essentially saying, hey, I'm sorry, I'm at fault. I understand the gravity of what has happened. I empathize. In short, it signals the blusher's adherence to societal norms and acknowledges failure, communicates appeasement and a nonverbal apology, which I think matches up with a lot of our experiences of shame, you know?
Yeah. And I'm just curious to know, what sort of circumstances cause you to blush?
I was thinking about this earlier when you're talking about, like, positive comments making one blush. Like, I do feel like I experience that. If someone says something nice about me in the presence of others, I get that kind of uncomfortable blush, even though I'm receiving positive feedback.
It's kind of an embarrassment thing. I mean, it's not shame, right?
You're no, not like, it's, oh, I'm it's not a shame, yeah. But it must be that attention thing, you know?
Yeah.
And in terms of, like, straight up shameful blushing, I guess I do blush if I forget to, do something, around the house, and it's like, oh, well, that's, like I said, I forgot to clean the cat box or something, Like, I might blush when I admit that, because it's like, not only did I not clean out the cat box, I'm the type of person who forgets that the cat box has poop in it, which
so
is
you have a little bit of guilt and shame with that.
Yeah, because I'm a pretty, I guess it kind of ties into, how I view myself and how I want other people to view me. So I view myself as the type of person who wouldn't let the cat poop build up.
You're a cat box cleaner.
Exactly. So if I deviate from that, like, that's like a fault in me. So
yeah, I've thought about it before, and it for me, oddly, it's when someone makes some sort of sexual innuendo. I'm not necessarily embarrassed about it. In fact, I'm usually the first person to do that, to make some sort of, sexual innuendo joke. Mm-hmm. But if someone else says it, then for whatever reason,
I start to flame up. I think I'm kind of that as well, yeah. Where it's almost like you're embarrassed for other people. It's like you're privy to the joke, so you were in the culture of the joke. You're among your fellow primates, and this is the subject matter on the table,
So. Yeah, we actually got a great email about this. It's called Secondhand Embarrassment.
Yeah. I mean, that ties in directly to what we're talking about here.
But embarrassment is, again, its own category. It doesn't have these long-ranging effects that shame does.
Before we get into the deterrent side of shame, or its potential uses of deterrent, I do want to point out a couple of quick stats here. One, a 1995 study found that 95% of those polled said they never blushed alone, which is interesting, and it kind of backs up the idea that it's about communicating.
And being observed.
Yeah. But then you already mentioned, like, blushing while writing, engaged in a solitary act. So,
oh, yeah, we were talking about this earlier, that sometimes from the effort of writing, especially if I'm writing some piece of fiction, that I come out flush-cheeked and blushing.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month. Taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Elia Kani, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and I also want to point out that there was a 2009 study that found that people who blush due to some violation are seen less negatively if they blush. So the idea being that again, we're potentially communicating authentic shame over something, and then when we receive that signal from another of our fellow primates, we say, oh, well, they're really sorry. They really feel bad about it. So I'm going to be less hard on them because there's the blush.
Well, and that's an aspect of vulnerability too,
right?
All right. So if you want to learn more about blushing, do check out Josh Clark's article, Why Do People Blush? It's really excellent. Now, when we talk about shame versus guilt as a deterrent, we've got some interesting findings here, especially if you start to think about your mom and what her modus operandi was growing up. Did she shame you or did she guilt you? Because one is far more effective than the other. And this sort of power of shaming, by the way, goes back way, way far, right?
Oh, yeah.
There is a power to it. It dates back at least to the stockades of colonial times here in the United States. But the question then becomes, does public shaming work as a deterrent to crimes or even unwanted behaviors? And George Mason psychologist June Tagney, she wanted to answer those questions. She suspected that shame would be less effective than guilt in deterring future crime. So think of the example of guilt equals I did something bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
And shame equals I am bad, okay? Now, what she did is she recruited more than 400 inmates at a local jail all recently incarcerated on felony charges. She administered a standard assessment to identify which inmates were prone to guilt feelings or shame feelings. And it also identified those who were most likely to blame others for their problems, because that's key here too. Then the inmates served their time and they were released. About a year after the release, Tagney and her colleagues followed up to see how they were doing, and they used several different measurements, including self-reports and public reports, to come up with a recidivism score for each inmate. And by recidivism, what we mean here is a relapse into criminal behavior that might land them in jail again.
Yeah, so her prediction was that shame-prone inmates would be more likely to return to crime after they were released. And her initial findings seemed to support this. Shame seemed to cause former inmates to blame others for their misfortune, leading to repeat crimes. But those who felt guilty were less likely to repeat their crimes a year out. So again, it plays directly into, do you feel like you were actually guilty, or is it something deeper, right? But then, further study revealed that this is a little more complicated than that. Found that shame led to recidivism only when the humiliated inmates blamed others. But when shamed individuals accepted the blame themselves, they didn't suffer an increase in recidivism. So in some cases, we can see shame might hold you back. Other times, it could give you a certain amount of strength. It could be a springboard to make some changes. One of the key ways here that Tagney points out is that shame can make you withdraw from others. And it kind of depends on who you're withdrawing from, whether that's a good move or a bad. So if it means you're withdrawing from enablers, from other criminals, from addicts, well, then that might be a step in the right direction. That kind of withdrawing from people would be like a springboard for change. On the other hand, if you're withdrawing from positive influences, if you're withdrawing from family, mm-hmm. you know, people that you feel ashamed in the presence of, or you're withdrawing from other important structures in your life, say church is important, and you end up withdrawing from church because you're ashamed of what you did. If you're withdrawing from, you know, other resources that could help you out, then that's bad news. You just go into that shame spiral away from the ladder that could pull you up.
That's right. And particularly if you're withdrawing because you blame that person or that mm-hmm. institution or that thing. And we see parallels with this study and alcoholism. Dr. Tony Webb, who holds a PhD in transdisciplinary research at the University of West Sydney, has looked into this. And he says that internally generated shame turns into shaming, something done to us that violates our sense of the fair go. And not unnaturally, we tend to react against this by attacking others, blaming, as we discussed, hiding, as we also discussed, and hiding from ourselves, he says. And so this plays into a kind of social and ecological apathy, as he says, and a wide range of addictive behaviors have a common root in what he says is unacknowledged shame. So let's look at a study here that looks a bit more into it. It's from 2013. It's from the Clinical Psychological Science by Jessica Tracy and Daniel Randles of the University of British Columbia. And they looked at drinking and health outcomes in a sample of newly sober recovering alcoholics. They used measures that assessed both self-reported shame and shame-related behaviors. And this becomes really important, by the way, the self-reported versus the behavior. So the behavior might be a narrowed chest and slumping shoulders. And the researchers took that information and they hypothesized that participants would be less able to voluntarily control their behavioral displays of shame, and that would be their tell. Mm-hmm. So in the first session, participants were asked to describe the last time that they drank and they felt badly about it. And the responses were videotaped by the researchers. In a second session, about 4 months later, participants were asked to report their drinking behaviors. And they completed questionnaires about their physical and mental health at both of these sessions. Now, here are the findings. People who displayed more shame-related behavior were more likely to be in poor physical health at the time of their first session. But more surprising, though, was the finding that behavioral displays of shame predicted whether participants would relapse after the first session. Not the self-reported, mm-hmm. but the way they were behaving with their body postures.
Okay.
And Tracy Randall says how much shame participants displayed strongly predicted not only whether they relapsed, but how bad that relapse was. That is, how many drinks they had if they did relapse. So they could take that information. They could take this outward expression of shame through the body and predict whether or not that person would fall into, say, that recidivism, so to speak, of alcoholism, that relapse.
It's interesting. This reminds me a little bit of the implicit association test that we discussed in our last episode, you know, about weeding out our self-reported ideas about self and others versus what we're feeling and what we're thinking below cognition.
Right. I mean, this requires you mm-hmm. to identify your feelings as either shame or guilt in order to begin to understand how to change the behavior, right? Because if you're unaware of it, you have an implicit bias, right, that's working under the cover about how the shame is manifesting in yourself. And so that would be one of the things that you would have to confront if you wanted to change yourself. Because if you think, I am this, I am a bad person, as opposed to I have exhibited some bad behaviors, well, that's the difference between change and just staying mired in that mindset.
Indeed, and this all stacks up really well with what I was reading from University of Alberta researcher Jessica Van Villet, 2009 study, where she looked at positive shame and problematic shame, which, you know, we've been discussing here. On the positive level, shame can be that springboard. It can force us to make changes that help us, that protect our relationships and preserve that fabric of society. Again, getting into that idea that we feel shame and because we've fallen out of step with societal norms. But then there's the problematic shame where, you know, the shame spiral, withdrawing from others, withdrawing from the very things you need to pull yourself out of the pit, right? And her research shows that people who feel debilitated by shame tend to, again, internalize and overpersonalize the situation, and they seem to feel like they cannot change things, they cannot pull things around. So she has a few suggestions here that I think are very valid and really stack up well with what we've been discussing here. She says, step back from the problem and view the picture in a different light. She says, possibly identify external factors that contribute to your actions or situation. Break the hopelessness and realize that there are steps you can take to make things right again, and make connections to people, individuals, to humanity itself, or even in some cases, depending on your particular worldview, to a higher power or a more, you know, noble idea.
You know, and I think this is particularly important in the sort of environment that we are in historically with the internet culture.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of shaming, right?
Yes.
And so we're absorbing that on subconscious levels. And so I think that you even have to cultivate an awareness in that aspect too. It's not just your own behaviors or how you operate in the world, but the kind of stuff that you are exposing yourself to or even participating in virtually online. And I'm talking about dog shaming here.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about the someone's dog has done something bad, like knock over a plant, and then they essentially show them ashamed with a sign that says, "I knocked over my master's potted plant."
Yes, there are a lot of dog shaming sites, including dogshaming.com. And just as you said, it could be like a dog looking sort of, you know, like it's been reproached and it's got those baleful eyes, and it might say, "I tried to make a sandwich, but I don't know how." And then it's got a bunch of, you know, pieces of bread stacked up on its head.
Because they, as we've discussed in some of our past episodes about dog and human relationships, they take on that submissive pose,
mm-hmm.
Which we often project shame and apology and, oh, he feels sad over what he did, when in reality it's submission.
It is. And if you want to know more about that, that episode is really interesting. I think it's called Your Dog Doesn't Love You.
Yes.
But it talks about the co-evolution of humans and dogs and how dogs' eye tracking evolved with humans, because it was so important for them to try to clue into what we wanted from them and what we were thinking so that they could get the scraps of food from us.
Yeah. Of course, it's interesting to think back on that and then look at this episode where we dismantle a human display of emotion. And when you start really taking it apart, like, is it that different from this display of obedience and submission on the part of the dog that we classify as being, oh, I'm sorry. And then we're talking about blood vessels welling up in the face, and it's basically saying, oh, I stepped out of line. And it's in a way, it's kind of its own signal of submission.
The difference here, though, is the dog is not saying, I am a bad dog.
It's true.
The dog's like, all right, what do I need to do to get to that treat? Yeah. What sort of, oh, you want the baleful eyes? Okay, here you go.
There you go, yeah. Human complexity changes everything. All right, well, hey, you want to check out dog shaming? You want to check out that episode on whether your dog loves you? You can find all of that on the landing page for this episode, and that is at stufftoblowyourmind.com. That's the mothership. That's where you'll find all of our videos, podcast episodes, blog posts, you name it.
And if you have feedback on this, on guilt, shame, embarrassment, you can send us an email at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, was good!
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.